Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 18th day of February 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing will be here to take a look at the agricultural energies. We'll preview the upcoming Springfield, Illinois Small Grains Conference. And if you live in that Mendota area in northern Illinois, you might want to be signed up because ADM will be there. They've got that brand new plant and will be looking to contract in the area, actually in a very large area, so you might want to hear more about that. And we'll also talk about all the things that are happening this week. Tonight I'll be in Clinton at the WHOW-sponsored Market Ag panel. You can find that on the schedule in our willag.org website. You'll also find the performance test bull sale in the schedule. That's coming on Thursday in Springfield, the Small Grains Conference, and of course the All Day Ag Outlook. Make sure you get your ticket for that one because it's coming up really quick on Tuesday, the 3rd day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $30. And you need to get yourself registered today. You can do that online at willag.org. Find all of those events under the calendar tabs. That'll either be over on the right-hand side of the page if you're on a desktop, or possibly way down at the bottom of the page if you're on a phone or a tablet. Again, willag.org or call 800-898-1065 to get yourself registered for the All Day Ag Outlook today. That's 800-898-1065.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished higher. The March contract up 5.25 at $3.83. May 5.5 higher, $3.87.5. And December, $3.93.25 up 4.5 cents. That following the wheat futures higher. The March contract in the soft red up 24 cents at $5.66.75. July at $5.62.5, 21.5 higher. Hard red up 21.25. In the July at $5. Even in the spring, in the September at $5.66.25, up 13.75. Beans were down a penny and a half the day at $8.92.25. In the March, the July, $9.14, 1.5 lower. And November down a penny and a quarter at $9.21.25. Live cattle futures were up about 60 cents. Feeders were up 77.5. And lean hogs were between 55 and $1.20 higher for the day. We're now joined by John Hester. He's filling in for Wayne Nelson, who's out of the office this afternoon to take a look at this marketplace. Hey, John, thanks so much for being with us. Gosh, I can't imagine. I don't even remember the last time wheat managed a 24-cent gain. What happened there?
Well, I think there was two or three things that led up to it. They came out and announced that the Australian wheat crop was a lot worse than they thought it was, or very poor conditions there. And then Chinese put out that they were going to lift some of the tariffs on some of the grains and the meat that they're going to buy. And then that spilled over. The funds started buying. Funds bought about 4,000 wheat. And then when the wheat surged, that spilled over into corn. And the funds bought about 4,500 corn today. And the crush was huge on the beans today, which created more oil. And so that was considered a little bearish overall, the bean market, and that's the reason it was down. But it was nice to see a lot of green on the screen today.
So on the Australian wheat crop, the idea is that this may be the smallest in 12 years out of that nation. That pushed, right, of course, wheat futures much, much higher. And then the Chinese saying we're going to lift some tariffs, and that'll free up trade. And the 15th has passed, and we should see something happen. Now, what I really want to know is, do you think there will be follow-through, or can you see the potential for follow-through in the wheat market in the overnight trade?
Well, I can see the potential. But it seems like whenever we have a big move like that, they always take part of it away the next day.
Indeed, they do. What are producers worried about when they call you at this point? Is it just mostly about ARC PLC and crop insurance?
No, I haven't had many questions about that. It's mostly, do I think the lows are in and is it going up?
And what do you tell them?
Well, I kind of feel like, my personal opinion is, in the corn, I kind of think they may have made a low last week. And I think they may work higher. Beans, I really don't have a good opinion on them. South America's crops getting better every day. They got rain down there, and so they're increasing the yields all the time in Brazil and Argentina, and they're getting rain, and they're planting a lot of corn down there right after the combines roll through. So, you know, that's a couple negative factors.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much, John. I appreciate it.
Hey, I enjoyed talking to you. Have a great day.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Hey, have you purchased those tickets yet? Gosh, I hope so. Time's running out for the all-day ag outlook. WILLAG.org or 1-800-898-1065. Early next month, there are a series of conferences that you might want to put on your to-do list. Those include, of course, the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's on the third day of March, the 4th and 5th of March in Springfield, Illinois. Practical Farmers of Iowa will be in town at the Crown Plaza for the Small Grains Conference. Now, Practical Farmers at practicalfarmers.org has a grant to move this particular conference across the Midwest. And I spoke with Alicia Bauer, who has been working with some of the commercial ag team here at Illinois Extension to help set up the program. I asked her just exactly what this Small Grains Conference is all about.
Small Grains Conference has been around since 2017, was our first year. It's been an annual event since then, and we kind of rotate through the different states in the quote-unquote Corn Belt, so places where people aren't growing that many small grains. So in 2017, we had it in Iowa, and then we had it in Minnesota in 2018, Wisconsin last year in 2019, and this year we're headed to Springfield, Illinois.
So there aren't a whole lot of small grains in central Illinois, some wheat on occasion. What are you hoping to inspire?
So we're just looking to increase crop diversity out there on the ground. And what we've seen here in Iowa is that as folks start to dabble with cover crops, they feel really limited by the window of opportunity after corn and soybean harvest. Just there's not a lot of heat units. There's not a lot of fun things you can do with cover crops. And then growers here started experimenting with, you know, well, how do I get a bigger window to plant these cover crops? I know, I'll plant a small grain that's harvested in July so that I can grow clover. I can grow this big, diverse mix that's got all these cool species in it, and sunflowers and Sudan grass and things like that. And so for growers here, that was kind of really the genesis that brought about this interest in these extended crop rotations. And they found that they had all these other benefits, like spreading out labor throughout the year, you know, using equipment and people power at times when they're not busy, as well as breaking up weed cycles and potentially decreasing the bills and things like fertilizer if you have a clover cover crop that's fixing nitrogen. And so we're just kind of looking to explore that whole package, really, of what's going on with small grains and adding them into a rotation, what that allows for cover crops, and then how that can really work for a whole farm to reduce those bills that keep coming in and piling up to kind of farm in a lower input way.
Well, let's start at the beginning for most producers. They might want to use a cover crop, as you suggested. They're limited by time because of the corn-soybean rotation, but adding a small grain might be useful in that, only, however, if there is a marketplace for it. Is there a market for small grains in central Illinois and other parts of the Midwest?
Yeah, that is the number one challenge that I hear from farmers when I'm chatting with them about making small grains work. And so we've made some headway in bringing some of these markets back. So one of the notable ones in Illinois is that ADM has, Archer Daniels Midland, has opened a new mill in Mendota, Illinois, so kind of north central there. And that mill is going to be sourcing grain, I think, internationally and domestically. And they're actually going to be attending the conference and providing a session, giving a session on their plan for sourcing wheat and their specifications and how you get into a contract with them in this brand new mill facility. So that's one exciting opportunity. But then we also have some other opportunities that are a little bit more homegrown, I would say. And one of them is for cover crop seed. So in order to use rye or oats are some of the most popular cover crops in that corn and soybean rotation. There is more and more demand for that seed, that oat and that rye seed. And so farmers can use that opportunity to you know, kind of make a market out of that and sell seed to their neighbors. But the issue is that there are quite a few rules governing seed sales and what seeds you can pre-produce and sell as seed and what you can't and what's protected and all those types of things. So that's going to be another session at the conference, is kind of talking with Illinois Crop Improvement and some seed sales folks about kind of navigating those rules and making sure that you're staying on the right side of the law, so to speak, when you're accessing those kinds of markets.
How do small grains work into the cover crops as a facilitator to put these in place?
So, like I said, the long window that you have open on that field after a small grain harvest to plant a cover crop is really exciting, that you, because of the life cycle of a small grain, you're harvesting usually in July, maybe into June, maybe into August a little bit, depending on what part of the state you're in. And so you've just got like 2-3 more months of time out there to grow a cover crop. And so that allows you to grow some different cover crops, like clover, for instance, has a little bit more expensive of seed, and it does need those heat units to really flower and start fixing nitrogen and providing a return on that investment in that seed. And so you can't really get that return in a corn soybean rotation, but with a small grain in rotation, you have that time to really get some nitrogen out of that clover and make that investment worthwhile in that more expensive seed. So that's one of the ways that we see it being easy to take advantage of that long cover crop window. And another is for forage, if there are cattle in the system. And we've, you know, kind of in that summertime, your cool season pastures are slumping off. They're not able to thrive in the heat of August and September. But you also don't want to be feeding hay at that time of the year either. You really don't want to be feeding hay at all if you can avoid it. And so having a cover crop that's, you know, maybe a mix of millet or Sudan grass or something that's, you know, going to put a lot of biomass on and could potentially relieve those pastures and those hay stores in, you know, August and September. So that's another way we see growers really taking advantage of that cover crop window.
Farmers can visit practicalfarmers.org online. That's practicalfarmers.org, all one word for practical farmers, of course, to get themselves registered. Look for the Small Grains Conference. It's in Springfield at the Wyndham, March 4 and 5. How much is the cost of the event?
Yeah, it's $40 to register if you're not a PFI member, and it's free if you do become a PFI member. So hopefully a pretty low bar.
All right. Hey, thank you, Alicia.
Thank you.
Alicia Bowers is with the Practical Farmers of Iowa. The Small Grains Conference is coming up in Springfield, Illinois on the 4th and 5th day of March. You can register online. Just look for practicalfarmers.org or go to our website at willag.org and look for the calendar link. Don Day is here now. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the weather forecast on this first trading day of the week. Hey, thanks, Don. I hope the weather where you are is good today.
Yeah, the sun is out, a little bit chilly, but for February, not bad.
Well, hopefully you'll send some of that our way. We'll discuss that in a moment. But let's talk about the rainfall in the southeast and the south and what it's doing there.
Well, as we all know, I've been hearing about the flooding, about how wet it's been in the southeast United States. A very persistent weather pattern has set up shop, and it's going to continue. We are going to continue to see significant rains across Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, the Carolinas. The Carolinas also, especially North Carolina, could be looking at a wintry weather pattern here later this week and this weekend. And Tennessee, Kentucky also will continue to see pretty significant rainfall over the next week to 10 days. So there's no break for the Southeast in terms of being wet. The Midwest, going to enjoy a fairly decent temperatures and conditions here in the short term, but boy, long term, Todd, we really see some cold weather coming. There's going to be a shot of colder air moving in later this week, but especially over the weekend, followed by a bigger push of colder weather next week, the last days of February for a large part of the nation, going to be turning much, much colder.
How cold?
Well, we're looking at temperatures going below average, as much as 10, 20 degrees or more below normal. So we're talking about temperatures that for overnight lows could be single digits and teens and colder in some areas from what we're seeing. We're also going to be looking at some possibilities of some snow across some of the northern and northwest areas of Corn Belt. So winter is, while it at times has been fairly mild in the central and eastern part of the United States, it may go out with a bang. There's going to be some colder weather at the end of the month and into March as well.
I made note that in the southeast, bloom has come early. There are some concerns about this. Any reason to think that this will dip far enough to do any damage at all to those agricultural crops that might come into bloom early into the southeast?
Well, from what we're seeing on some of our new charts today, I think that's on the table. I think the possibility of some of that cold air pushing pretty far south and east into those areas that have been so mild is a possibility and something that will have to watch closely.
Turn your attention to the southern hemisphere now. Of course, they're in the middle of harvest for soybeans across a large part of that continent. In Brazil in particular, they're not only harvesting, but they're planting second crop corn. What do we know about the upcoming weather for them?
Brazil's going to have an active weather pattern, and it's looking wet. For harvest operations and planting, there's several opportunities for rain. Some of it in some of the central and eastern and especially the southern growing areas of Brazil, they've got an active weather pattern. Argentina's a little different. It looks like while some of the far northern growing areas of Argentina will be a little bit wet, but Brazil, I think, could have some challenges over the next week and a half with wet conditions.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. On this Tuesday, let's turn our attention to the Agricultural Energy's Dave Chatterton here. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign. Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us. Oh, and I'm sure looking forward to having you over at the All Day Ag Outlook for the Beef House event on the third day of March. That should be fun.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it as well, Todd. Should be a good event. Looks like the crowd's going to come out and certainly have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and if they've not already registered, and they still can, willag.org or 800-898-1065. Let's take up energies for the moment. Crude oil had been under $50, though it's traded above that now a barrel. Can you give me your assessment of what's happening in China with coronavirus, in particular as it has to do with the use of energy, and what impact that has on the rest of the planet?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Todd, China is the number one energy consumer in the world behind the U.S., and so what happens there is very important. As the coronavirus has set in and you're well aware of what's going on with the travel restrictions and the quarantines and the shutdowns and all the problems that they're having, and essentially the refiners are really slowing down their use and their imports of crude oil. We've seen cargoes have to be diverted, similar to some things that we've seen in the agricultural complex. So, like you said, briefly, that drove crude back below $50. We bounced back over $52 here today, although we are trading lower. And, of course, the big, what if in this situation is how long does it last and what effect does it have? We've seen people like the EIA and the IEA both cutting their global, not only GDP forecast, but with that, their forecast for the oil demand. And we've seen OPEC go in and start talking about an emergency session. OPEC, it looks like, has agreed in principle to an additional 600,000 barrel per day production cut, but they'll finalize that at their meeting coming up here in early March on the 5th and the 6th. So certainly it's been the talk of the energy complex, very similar to what we've seen in the oil complex or the ag complex. And that's, of course, created some opportunities here that maybe we should talk about for diesel fuel and gasoline.
Well, tell me about those.
Yeah, so with, you know, diesel fuel in particular, if we're talking about ag users, we saw that market go from, in NYMEX terms, Todd, like just over $2.10 a barrel back in mid-January when the Soleimani assassination took place and drove prices higher, all the way down to below $1.60 in futures here just recently over the last few weeks. And that's all based on what's happened primarily with China and some other issues going on. And so with that, our targets have been triggered. We've been out actively. We've seen our end users, our consumers of fuel being actively at forecasting not only spring and fall diesel fuel in the ag sense, but also summer irrigation or for transportation needs or whatever the case might be. That 157 level that we got to, the price low that we had in diesel fuel and futures in all of 2019 was around $1.64, and that came in the first few days of January, and we never looked back. So that $1.57 mark was the lowest that we had really seen since the summer of about 2017. So it is a pretty significant decline. That's almost a 30% decline in prices since that point. Now, we've bounced back just a little bit. We're in the lower to mid-160s right now, but certainly an opportunity that you want to be watching as a producer and talk about filling tanks or forward contracting here.
Let's discuss the direct impact on agriculture in the field. Ethanol production, what does it look like at this point, and what are margins like for the plants?
Yeah, margins continue to struggle. Production has been hanging in there. We haven't really seen a turn back. What we have seen is an increase in stocks, and stocks just a few weeks ago got within, I think they printed the fourth highest on record for ethanol stocks in the U.S. So we continue to have an issue of finding enough gasoline demand to blend this ethanol into. Margins have been, depending on how you want to calculate it, gross margins for Illinois, Iowa ethanol plants are probably in the 25 to 30 cent range per gallon right now. That really puts most plants on a net basis into the red, depending on whether they're selling corn oil or doing different things. So it becomes a struggle to try and find more demand for corn-based ethanol as opposed to less going forward. Whether that USDA number or projection will change, you know, we'll have to wait till next month to see. But certainly it looks like, you know, it could see some additional pressure to the downside here.
Do you have thoughts on the last 6 to 7 months as it relates to the ethanol industry, the announcements of POET slowing down or shuttering plants, and then Green Plains deciding that it would be a DDG first rather than an ethanol first production company?
Yeah, really interesting times. And I mean, I think you have to frame this up in the perspective of ethanol is obviously by far the number one demand component on the balance sheet for corn. You're talking about almost 40% of our domestic crop going into ethanol use. The gasoline demand in the U.S. has plateaued and is beginning to shrink, and that involves a whole host of factors, including, you know, demographics of where people live and millennials and their choices, electric cars, fuel efficiency, you know, mass transportation, the greener, sentiment of the up and comers in our workforce. And so all those things combined are really, we're seeing gasoline demand start to decline. And with the ethanol wafers that have come in, that's hurt us even more. So unless we can find a way to not only promote, but also find the infrastructure for a higher blend rate, so an E12, an E15, an E20, so on and so forth, we need to find a replacement in the ag markets for that additional demand that was going towards ethanol. The export market for ethanol is somewhat shaky. We have trouble getting product to South America because of the tariffs. If China were to take an ethanol initiative, that would certainly help us, but they've moved the opposite direction from that. So it's a little bit of a tough puzzle to solve at the moment, and certainly not one of the brighter spots that we see on the front for agriculture or for corn demand going forward here.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you, Todd. Always good to be with you.
And good to be with you as well. Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing, helped us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us online, look us up, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Tonight, I'll be in Clinton, Illinois, by the way, at the Richland Community College building at 6 o'clock. Doors open 6:30. I'll be up in front along with Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois to talk about crop insurance and the ARC-PLC decision. Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dale Durkles with Grain Cycles, and we'll take up the commodity markets and how to price both new and old crop corn and soybeans I hope to see you there.